This is Foos Week, folks. I'm Adam Gilson. There's Tom Robinson. That's Hannah Smith. We got a good one for you tonight. Going to be learning a lot about the 2023 South Carolina Championships.
With North.
North. I knew it.
Big difference.
I knew I was going to do it. The entire time I'm sitting there saying, don't say South. Don't say South. Whatever. That's okay. You know what? I'll Venmo Robert some money or something later and apologize. That's my mea culpa. But anyways, well, that's a great way to start the show, Adam.
Take two.
Yeah, take two. This is Foos Week. I'm Adam Gilson. We're going to talk about North Carolina State Championships. Huh? All right. That worked out.
Nice. Much better.
Yeah, thank you.
You're so smooth, man.
Yeah,
so
that,
smooth.
No, that is good stuff. I don't know. Live radio and all that. Anywho, Tom, how you doing,
yes.
sir?
Yes. Hey, it's another day slaving over a hot microphone.
Oh.
Let's put it that way.
Wow. Yeah. And how does that actually work for you? How
do you do it? Well, it's, you know, just working with individuals who want to learn more about how to slave over a hot microphone.
Oh, so it's a kind of a cyclical thing where you pass on the next generation and they pass it on.
Just giving them a help up the ladder, that's all.
Is that a metaphorical thing when you say hot mic? Like, is it actually physically hot, or you just mean people can hear us, like, right now?
No, it's a live or hot mic is something that we'd always have to. Here was the thing back in the day when I was first going through the learning process myself. One of my instructors said, when you're in a room where there's a microphone, assume that it's always hot.
Mm.
Or what he meant was assume it's always live.
Yeah.
So be careful what you say around that microphone. Of course, in those
can't
days,
confirm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine.
So. Okay, I thought you were doing a play on words of a hot stove, nope. But you literally mean a hot mic. And then Hannah, so I want to see how you're doing, Hannah, but also I want to know, what did you say, Hannah? What are you talking? There's a story.
Oops,
there.
You'll have to ask Keith. It was me and Keith Glenn clowning one day or night.
Well, the only time I know that you and Keith have worked any time together was at TKO.
Might have been that, yeah. I don't know. We've done a few. That one, Nationals maybe or something. But yeah.
Is it recorded someplace? Is it someplace where we can find it?
I think you got taken care of. Thanks.
What does that mean?
You think? Okay.
I've washed my hands of this. It's fine.
All right. Okay. Well, we don't want to get anything too awkward, but
any context you want to share with no?
Nope.
Okay. Nope.
It's for the Patreons only.
That's it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Patreons only, I got to say something coming up in the next few days. Early access for the Patreons is going to be this fantastic chat that we had yesterday, Hannah, that you brought together with Lily Andres and Vivi. Oh, yeah. And she told me how to pronounce it, and I messed up her last name. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to be disrespectful.
Vivi and Lily,
yeah. We talked to them from the Berlin Bears out of Germany and the Bundesliga tournament that you're going to be going to next month. And it was so exciting to hear all of that because I had no idea how German football works. I had no idea how the league system works. I had no idea about any of that. And to hear those two and how awesome they are and all the cool stuff that they're doing and have done – was exciting. And my point is that we are going to be giving early access to that Foos Week episode very soon in the next day or two to the Patreons supporters. And the next week it'll go live to everybody else on YouTube and Buzzsprout. But I mean, Hannah, that was awesome. Great job getting them together.
Yeah, really was. What a great score.
Super excited about it too. I think it's going to be something cool for the whole foosball community, whether you're going to Germany or you haven't, or you're never planning to go. It's still really cool if you enjoy foosball to learn about. It's like unlocking a new level of like foosball and like how they handle things over there in that world in comparison to ours. And it's just really cool. And I think we can learn a lot from that too. So you guys definitely got to check it out. It's going to be a good time.
100%. Just hearing about the league play. It's just so much fun, and these league tournaments just sounds like so much fun. I mean, Tom, did you get that? You got that like that sense of camaraderie?
Oh, it's a whole different feel. It seems like their focus is really on building the team, and of course building the players one by one, training centers and learning centers. I mean, they're all about just making sure everybody who wants to play gets a chance to do so. And of course, they have a different perspective because of the popularity of European football or soccer, as we call it. It's exciting. I'm very envious, Hannah, that you're going to spend all that time there. What is it, 2 weeks you're going to be there?
This time is not. We'll be leaving Wednesday and we'll be coming home. We'll be back in the U.S. on Tuesday.
Oh, gotcha. So
not super long. Hopefully, if we make it to the European Champions League in Italy, my mom's already decided that she's going to come with us, and we're going to go a few days early to do a lot of cool stuff in Italy. So
when would that
really
be?
Hope we make it so we can do that.
When would that be?
November.
That'd be November. Nice. Oh, that'd be awesome.
The week before duck season. So
the week before duck season.
Just letting you guys know.
Yeah.
Got to make a sacrifice once in a while.
We know.
That's it.
You know.
Well, I have a feeling that's going to be happening for you guys. It seems like you're going to be dominating.
We shall see.
I like that. And I like that. And I'm excited that everybody else gets to hear that, especially the Patreon early access and everybody else. I think that'll be probably going up by next week for everybody else. So speaking of tournaments that you're going to be going to soon, Hannah, you're going to a tournament this weekend, which is based around kind of the guest that we have on this week tonight, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And that is and hold on. It's the North Carolina State Championship.
It is.
Okay.
So the world's turning.
Yeah, we can edit that outside of the fact that everybody else already heard that already, but that's fine. But yeah, I'm excited to hear more about that, and I'm excited to hear more about Bonzini play, and I'm excited to be talking to our guest tonight, who's running this, Robert Yates. Robert, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
There he is.
There he is.
Robert, how you doing, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. We talked to a lot of promoters the week of their tournament, and they seem harried or upset or frustrated or mad or enraged or, you know, about to throw a cup of yogurt at the wall, and you are sitting there looking really relaxed.
Yeah, I got my nice little palm tree shirt on, just pretending I'm at the beach and just playing it by ear. Yeah,
that's how you roll.
The stress comes in for me on Friday.
Oh, it's Friday. Okay, so you're barely.
Yeah, I arrive at 1 p.m.
That's when the stress comes.
Oh, is that when the stress arrives when Hannah gets there? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you get there.
Yeah, I'll be picking her from the airport and then taking a half day.
So tell us about this. A lot of, pretty much, the vast majority of the people listening to this haven't been to a Bonzini tournament. This is a Bonzini tournament.
Yeah. Yep.
What the format looks, I looked at the flyer, the format looks the same, but the table's different. And does that change things? Does that run things? How many Bonzini tables are going to be there? How many people are you expecting? Like, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, so we're going to have 8 tables, all with the new surface. They recently changed the surface. I believe some ingredient that was made, and it got banned for environmental reasons. Either way, I'm glad they did. It helps the ball roll a whole lot truer, and it really helps Tornado players get more acclimated to the game faster. But we'll have roughly, we capped it at 64 players, but we're probably looking at 68 or 69 right now.
Nice.
That's awesome.
You said banned for mental issues?
Environmental.
Oh, environmental reasons. Issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because I think all foosters have mental issues, but, you know.
Yeah, that shouldn't be reason for disqualification.
That shouldn't be. That should be actually reason for promotion, in my opinion, but that's just me. But so you're going to have 8 tables, about 68 or 64-ish plus players. And are we going to be able to watch it? Is it being streamed anywhere? Are we being able to see it anywhere?
I wanted to, but I'm not sure if I'm going to make it happen this year. We're still working on it. Chris Duffy, if he comes through, he might be able to make it happen.
Chris Duffy.
Having House of Tournaments, I'm excited for it this year because it has the autopilot feature. And so normally I set up the tables, I set up the lights, I do the registration, and I call the matches. It's kind of nice to have not to write down each person's name on a match card and put it on a card tree and manually enter in their results. Wow. Take timeouts between games, go call matches. So I'm really excited to be able to use that autopilot feature.
Nice. Tom?
No, I was just wondering how many years you've been at this. And is this this is the first time you'd be using computers?
We've used computers. We used NetFoos in the past, though. So okay. I think I probably ran my first tournament around 2013.
Oh, so it's you're a vet of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I always like to keep it small. I don't want the stress of having, you know, hundreds of people at a tournament.
Hence the Bonzini table. Although you're speaking to a Bonzini devotee. I love Bonzini because that's where I was raised. What's the general scuttlebutt when people hear about a Bonzini tournament? What's the reaction? Do you get inquiries about it, or what do people typically say?
So I'm assuming you mean the Tornado crowd. What do they say about this? It's a mixed bag. Occasionally I'll get people like you that, you know, played Bonzini back in the day and like, oh, I really enjoyed that table. I just don't see it around anymore. Or you'll get people that stepped up to a Bonzini and try to do, I hear this a lot. You can't do a rollover on Bonzini. And I imagine they step up there, it doesn't work. And they're like, oh, this table, it's a toy. Like, no, if I can't do a rollover on this table, then it must be the table. That's the problem. Toy. Yeah.
Metal men with very well-crafted tables. Toy? No.
Yep. They see the flimsy rod because it's telescopic.
Well, that's because these guys want to bend the rod.
Exactly.
They can't do it otherwise. So one of the things I really remember about the Bonzini I love the most was the sound of the goal.
Yeah, I agree.
It's loud. Like that.
If you hit it just right, it comes back out almost every time. It just feels
right?
great.
The best.
On the old school tables, you could hit it so hard, it'd go through the cabinet and come back out the other side of the goal.
And that's part of the thrill of it all.
Yeah.
Hannah?
And I can tell. I can tell Hannah's
like... You got a question there.
I just love Bonzini so much. Oh my gosh.
Cool.
So I don't guess I really get to say I love it that much, but I do. I showed up like to Nationals last year, right before I went to France. That's where I went. Yeah, France. And I was like, hey, Robert, I really want to come to a tournament. I need a table. So I literally, me and my mom drove my truck to Nationals all the way and got there and played all the whole tournament and bought a new Surface Bonzini there and drove it back home. And it was a really entertaining trip. If you had a video camera on us, you would have really laughed a lot. But first event was like women's singles. And I like walked into the room, like paid my events and like walked. And they're like, okay, you're up on one. I'm just like, what? I haven't even hit a ball yet. I've never even touched a Bonzini. I'm like calling timeouts like, Robert, what am I doing? What do I do? Like, I can't hit the ball forward. And then it's just like, all right, well, you better use some transition, something to get through this one, kids. I just got through it. But by the end of the weekend, I had so many people helping me out and teaching me cool things and meeting this great group of people. And I don't think I would have loved the table and the Bonzini idea that much if it wasn't for this group of people that I got to experience my first Bonzini tournament with. So I personally cannot wait. I don't care how bad I am at the game. I cannot wait to be back and be in North Carolina and banging on a Bonzini table.
Yeah, and I think that's really what makes Bonzini so special is the culture that's always kind of been there. That's kind of was driven by Alan Cribbs and the type of environment he wanted to create. I was very jarred my first Tornado tournament. You know, I saw someone flip over a table and I'm seeing people call refs. We don't even, back then we didn't even call fouls, let alone call a ref on somebody. And so that's what I've always tried to convince people. I'm like, just come to my tournament. I get it. You don't like Bonzini. Come to my tournament. I'll host you. You know, I'll make sure that it's a good time so that they can get the full experience and not just a one-off incident on a Bonzini they played somewhere.
Absolutely. And growing up all Tornado with one of the roughest crews, I think, on Tornado regarding jarring and five-barring and talking noise and in your face, you know, whatever. I grew up with that. So it was like a complete change whenever I went to a Bonzini tournament. And this sounds so cliche, but it is the truth. When you go and you play a Bonzini tournament with these guys, it is like showing up and eating dinner with gentlemen, not just some dudes that you know that are your bros. Like, they treat everyone so nicely, and it truly seems more like a gentleman's sport. You know, people are just great. They have a great attitude towards the game. Okay, you beat them 5-0. They don't care. That's like, great shot, girl. Like, that was really nice. Like, you know, like, you did a good pass. Or like, what can I help you improve? Or like, what can you help me improve? Like, it's just so much deeper than the score on Bonzini. And, you know, it was in a great location, and everyone just had a really nice feel to it. So, you know, I was terrible. I was literally, I couldn't execute anything. And people were so nice to me about it. And like, even in between my matches, they would be like, hey, you know, I know you're having trouble in your last match. You know, you won, but like, come on, let's get on a table and let me show you something. And I was like, what? Weird. Okay, thanks. You know, but just genuinely great people just going out of their way to help you in any way possible. And another way, so it was me and my mom. We drove my truck all the way up there, and we had to figure out how to get this Bonzini table back home. Well, it wouldn't just fit in the back of my truck bed and like close the tailgate, drive home, no problem. So we had to figure out how to strap this thing in. Well, me and my mom, like, we're like, I don't really know how we're going to do this. And it was supposed to like torrential downpour rain all the way home. Whoa. So we had like a big crew of like 4 or 5 of the guys out there, like helping us like box this table up, strap it down, get ready for rain. And I was like, oh my gosh, if I would have strapped this thing in at every red light, I was like, is it going to come out of the back of the truck? And my new table will be at this intersection back here. But it made it home. But it was just like so many great little things that happened along that journey that was just so much fun. So love it. Can't wait. Don't care if I lose every game that I play. Can't wait to be back.
I'm sure that won't happen.
We'll see.
Robert, you're a promoter. You've got this tournament. I want to know more about the details of the tournament here shortly. But my larger question for you is that why do you do this?
Well, I kind of got into this at a young age. I was a second generation Bonzini player, like one of the first second generation Bonzini players. And I kind of always had a close relationship with Alan. He always gave me good feedback and advice. And when I get really interested in things, I go like super deep. And so we just started doing our own tournaments just because that felt like the best way to represent our group and to bring interest into our group. We found that having more tournaments increases engagement for our locals, for our weeklies as well. If you have like a long gap between tournaments, we start to notice kind of a drop off in players attending the weeklies too. When Alan kind of stepped away and sold Bonzini USA to Atlanta Billiards and Spas, well, we're kind of now left without a tournament director and promoter. So a few of us from Bonzini kind of joined together. We went down to Scott's Lake House to have a meeting with representation from kind of each group. Sans the newly founded Virginia group. We didn't know about them quite yet. But we kind of came up with a plan, and then COVID hit and nothing really happened. Scott was great. He bought tables. He gave us chances to play NC State and Nationals. And then Virginia started coming together, but like South Carolina kind of fell off the map for us. That was a huge hub of players that we lost. We've kind of got that bit back from Virginia, but North Carolina is really the core Bonzini. Most of your top talent, most of your players, they're there. There's great players across the entire East Coast, but North Carolina is kind of like that breeding ground since that is where Alan was distributing his tables out of.
Well, so I'm sorry, Tom. Two follow-up questions. First question. Yeah. When I say why, I mean, that's the how that you just answered, but what's the why? What does it do for you? Why do you do it? Cause there's a passion that I feel from you, and I just want to know what drives that. What do you get from that? How do you do that?
I don't know. I guess I always was frustrated with how tournaments ran. No tournaments in particular, just problems that I saw and inefficiencies that I saw. And so I kind of wanted, I guess, in the beginning to say, like, I can do this better. Watch. I can put together flyers by organizing events and structure it in a way that can allow it to run smoother than what it does run. So we will kind of eliminate and mitigate conflicts the best you can. And then it just kind of kept escalating. I kept trying to one-up myself. I think I posted a picture on Facebook with the 41 prize packages I made. My wife like laminated Raleigh foosball drawstring bags, and we got like koozies, and I got lots of beer sponsors for like shirts and glasses and stuff, and put all that together. So I'm always just kind of chasing making a better experience to create more interest in players and try to grow it. I want to grow it naturally, because if I don't do this in 15, 20 years from now, I won't be able to play in a Bonzini tournament.
Mm.
And I see this whole vast ocean of foosball players that play on a different table. And so I'm trying to find ways to bridge that gap, one, to help the Tornado base, but also help us get some of those really good Tornado players to come and join our group and elevate our group.
So just to say this, this is my last follow-up here. It's not even really a question, just a statement. And thank you for that, Robert. But just so people understand this and know this, that foosball is not dying. And we see this so much on Facebook and any other social media place. Foosball is not dying. It can't die with people like Robert and all the other people that we have on here talking about foosball, so passionately doing the things they want to do, be it their motivation to one-up themselves or their motivation to continue a tradition that they're doing or anything else like that. Foosball is not dying. Foosball is just growing and growing in different ways and adjusting to the technology that exists now versus 50 years ago. And I love it. And I'm just so glad to hear that, Robert. That's just exciting as hell for me to hear that. But foosball is not dying. It's just getting stronger and better in different ways. Tom?
So my question, because you're mentioning the fact that there's a scene, Virginia Beach, I guess, is the other place where there are players. And there was South Carolina. Now, as far as your scene is concerned, who are some of the top players? Would you like to name drop? And if you want to mention your own name, we're cool with that. But sure. Who are some of the best players on Bonzini?
So naturally, you got to list Bruce Nardosi first, right? He's like the Todd Lafredo of Bonzini.
Bruce, yes.
We got a guy that's come back out recently from Greenville, North Carolina, Rick Owens. Still today in the points book, he is the highest rated singles player. I think I'm right below him by like 300 points.
Okay.
Which for our point system is a large margin. Jimmy Parrish, he was a top master. There's videos of him on YouTube playing Todd Lafredo and Rene Pierre. Mike West is one of the top Bonzini players probably the past, you know, 3 or 4 years or so. He's a Tornado player. I think he's an expert on Tornado, but his style carries over really well to Bonzini. And so he's probably one of the tougher doubles players that I have to go through. And then there's a young guy. I kind of grew up playing at his house when he was a little kid, Cameron Hayes. He's not a little kid anymore, but he plays like a really fun, loose, free style. And when it works, I mean, it just works. There's nothing you can do. I can't even fault my partners. He's really, really creative, and it can be tough to deal with.
So what, now, as far as you're concerned, do you prefer singles over doubles, or do you have a position you like to play more than another? What's your preference?
Growing up, I really preferred singles a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Now I find I don't get as much enjoyment out of foosball as I used to, especially on Bonzini. It's kind of why my focus is more playing tournaments on Tornado these days, because there's kind of more ladders to climb. There's not much I can do now that I haven't already done. So I'm kind of, for that reason, enjoy doubles more, because I can give someone else maybe experience that they haven't had. And so, like, I try to invite, you know, I invited Hannah. I was like, hey, you come, I'll play mixed with you. I'll give you a place to stay. I'll pick you up from the airport, like, make it a good time. I reached out to Michael Stahl, gave him the same proposition. I'll pick you up from the airport. I'll play open doubles with you. I'll even play back for you. Like, come out here and play. And so I kind of enjoy, you know, taking players that haven't won at that level that I know can, if they had, you know, the right partner, and trying it out. And when it works, I feel really good and really happy for that person. And that's kind of where I glean my happiness from.
Yeah, no, it's just a deal that's like so great. And even if you didn't offer me to come and stay and pick me up and all this, I'm still coming because I had such a blast the first time. And I'm so appreciative of people like you who give me that opportunity. You know, to make you feel like you're at home, especially like this is one Bracklin's not able to come to. And it's like, he's like, oh yeah, you're going to go stay with Robert and his wife and all of his great kids, and you're going to have so much fun. You're not going to be like stuck at a bar all weekend, like, and I'm worried about like who's there, or, like, you know, where you're at, or like some dump. It's like actually a nice location, and you're, you know, it just makes the weekend so much more enjoyable, and it really is like a vacation. And I do appreciate the offer and everything you're doing for foosball. One of the things I wanted to point out that I'm looking at the flyer is my favorite event at Nationals was probably like the Roto DYP. I think it was so fun. So like Roto draw, I think we drew each other, Robert and I drew each other, and every ball you have to switch. And like, it really is just so enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. And I know I haven't played this one before, but it says there's 4-on-4. And I am down for 4-on-4. So like looking at the flyer is like so cool that there is an event like that where you can like change it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah. The 4-on-4 is actually kind of like a time savings measure, right? So I had to add more events because we changed our ranking system to have more divisions than before. So I'm like, man, I got more singles events, more doubles events. This stuff's going to conflict. So normally we have a Friday DYP. So I was like, well, I'll move the Pro-Am up there. Go ahead and get some of those master events going. And instead of a DYP, I'll just do a 4-on-4 at the end of the week, because then that's like least amount of teams you could possibly get in an event, pretty much.
That's fun.
Yep. And I've never done it on Bonzini, so I'm kind of excited to see how that goes.
You mentioned your ranking system. Do you use a different point system or rank system?
Yeah, so we use an ELO-based system. Right now we're using House of Tournaments ELO system. And so every 500 points is kind of a new ranking. So it's like rookie goes to 499, amateur goes to, you know, 999, and then experts up to 1500, pros to 1999, and then pro master is 2000 and above.
Is that all public? Can you see that if you look at the modern the House of Tournaments or Modern Foosball website? Yep. Or?
Yeah, you can. All the rankings are up there. And
is it?
It's under Babyfoot USA.
Oh, Babyfoot.
At the top.
Yeah.
Since Bonzini USA got sold to another company, we can't really be, we got to be careful about using that word Bonzini when representing the stuff that we do, because we want to ensure that we're not misrepresenting Bonzini USA, the business, versus, you know, Bonzini, the table.
Oh, wait. So, but it said, I mean, because that I said that when I was put this on Facebook talking about Bonzini USA. So this is a good time to bring it up. Are you affiliated with that? Like, I was assuming you were.
So this is the first year that we've kind of worked together with them.
Okay.
So we kind of got screwed in the sense with these new table surfaces. Right. So our table surfaces at the bar, we put the new ones on, but my table, my dad's table, the tables that we would get from other people, they all had the old surface. And so I was like, man, this really stinks, because I do not want to have a tournament where the table surfaces are different. Like, that's just unacceptable.
Right.
And so I did approach Bill at Bonzini USA to talk about how we could work as a partnership together. And so he was really great with all this. Let me trade in a couple of my tables and get 6 brand new ITSF Bonzinis.
Cool.
And the deal is I leave them there, pick them up when I need them for the tournament, use the trailer that they have, and then drop them back off again. It's literally 5 miles from the location where the tables are stored.
Nice.
And so I use, now this is why we're kind of doing the table sponsorship too, and having a charity that we're donating to for this tournament. So with each table sponsorship that we receive, half of it goes to the charity, the other half goes towards kind of paying off those tables. And so it's kind of a win-win. I make sure that I keep paying against the tables every tournament, and we get to have good publicity, getting a table for the Boys and Girls Club, and sending them some cash as well.
Yeah, I just noticed that in the announcement we've been using to announce tournaments. The Boys and Girls Club was mentioned in your section on your mention. So how long have you been affiliated with the Boys and Girls Clubs?
This is the first time. So I never really had the infrastructure in place to do this the right way.
Yeah.
But I filed a nonprofit to open up USA Babyfoot, which is all official now. And I reached out to Boys and Girls Club because Alan had always done charities.
Mm-hmm.
And all those charities were really great. So how do you choose which one that you want to donate to? Like, we always did the Jimmy V Foundation for the North Carolina Open. And that's a great cause. But from my perspective, I kind of wanted to donate toward a cause that could also benefit the foosball world.
Yes.
I find whenever someone comes out to the bar for the first time, they touched a table somewhere at some point in their life.
Yep.
And so from my perspective, getting people to touch tables throughout their lifetime, and then maybe one day they find out about this place in Raleigh that has a foosball tournament, and that seems to get players to stick a little more when they have that prior exposure.
Do you provide tables to the Boys and Girls Clubs to use?
We're going to be donating one from this tournament.
Awesome. Yeah. That is
so a Bonzini.
Cool. That's where it starts, right? You know, when the kids are hanging out there looking for things to do at the Boys and Girls Clubs, that if there's a table, they're going to be using it.
Yeah, exactly. So we just got to find ways to get down there and maybe give them some little clinics and seminars and show them how to, you know, do some organized play so they can make fun out of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. One thing that I kind of wanted you to touch on, maybe just for like general public who isn't super aware of how Bonzini tables are, how they function, what they do. My mom was actually texting me and she was like, you know, she was an old, she played foosball back in the day too, but all tornado, dynamo, that kind of thing. She'd never seen a Bonzini before prior to turning up to the tournament with me. And she was like, weird, you have to bring your own handles. You don't have any. And I was like, no, I don't. But that was one of the things that stood out to her. And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, like the wooden sides and like how they are refurbished sometimes or what it's like or anything that's a little bit different for most of the probably, I'm assuming the listeners might be tornado players or not Bonzini players. Can you explain some things that would stick out to them?
Yeah, that's a common question. Even like random people at the bar, like what's the difference between these two tables? Even when they're looking right at it, I'm like,
oh. Sure.
All right, I don't want to be condescending, but no, I would say the biggest difference in the table, in my opinion, is having telescopic rods with steel feet. Because you don't have a solid rod that protrudes to the table, the process of torquing the rod, while it can still give you additional power in Bonzini, it kind of hurts you in the sense of speed, because when you bend that rod, you have an inner rod and an outer rod binding together as you're doing that stroke. And so it can be kind of challenging for people to get power out of it and actually hit it consistently, because a lot of it's actually wrist speed. You can use the weight of the man to help generate more power. It's kind of like if you're swinging a wiffle ball bat, you're swinging an aluminum bat. Like, yeah, you're going to be able to get more power out of that with speed. So that would probably be the biggest difference. And then the surface is a little not true.
So handles, tornado player going to Bonzini, Robert had some tornado style handles for me to try on and you can swap them up however, but I know there are a lot of variations of handles. And you can rent them at the tournament. If you don't have any, don't stress. They have different styles and they have people that design them and make them. So I thought that was really good. You know, for me, if I'm going to shoot a rollover, it was really cool being able to learn on a tornado handle in comparison to the, you know, traditional handle. But now I'm focusing on shooting a front pin, and I really want to learn how to shoot like with the doorknob handles, like the ones that like the French team uses. So it's cool to have the options, I think. That was a cool thing for me.
Yeah, I agree. It really didn't start out for people using different handles in the beginning. It was just kind of like out of laziness. Like I got a table at home. I got handles up there that are wrapped. I don't have to unwrap and rewrap every single time. I'll just like take the handles off and put my handles on. And then over time, we found that through the course of a weekend, people taking them off and putting them back on, they start disappearing and you'd lose a handful of like $18 handles. And so then they started going to the like handle rental model. And I feel like once you started getting to that point, players that didn't normally have handles were like, well, I might as well get handles. And there's people coming out building these different designs. You know, I got a Roberto Sport handle for Bonzini. I got a tornado handle for Bonzini. I even got a Lehmacher handle that I found in Germany that works on Bonzini.
Cool.
And like Hannah said, like, yeah, using the like French style Bonzini handle, it actually more naturally cuts the ball consistently. And so the handle that you choose kind of, there's pros and cons depending on the shot that you want to use.
Absolutely. And I'm no Bonzini vet at all. But, you know, working through trying to figure out which shot I want to try to shoot or like on transition, I really like shooting this shot, but it makes it very difficult with handle A in comparison to handle B. But then again, I can shoot a rollover easier with handle B. So it's just like what do I do? You know, how do you get good? But I think there's a certain respect that comes with Bonzini, and I'm almost over forcing my tornado game onto this Bonzini table. And I was talking with Fred last night about a plan going forward, fixing my game and structuring more European style. So hopefully that'll be something that I can work on. And I think you just appreciate the table more when you do what works there.
You were talking to who?
Fred.
Fred.
Collignon. Yeah.
Fred Rico Collignon. Oh, wow. Well, right.
Yeah. Rico. I wrote him last night. I was like, look, buddy, we got to change this. This is terrible. I gotta stop forcing this tornado game.
We do it every day. We just talk to Freddie. It's cool. Wow. Freddie Collignon. Fred. Nice. You didn't want to tell us you were talking to Fred Collignon? Oh,
no.
My God.
Yeah.
We all know Fred.
Wow. I just wrote him up.
So, Robert.
That's awesome.
Robert, somebody comes to your tournament, lifetime tornado player, no clue about Bonzini. Just sitting there, they show up expecting to just have a shitty time, whatever, because they're not happy with Bonzini, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you tell them? And what do you tell them? How do you tell them? Like, what seed do you plant in their mind for them to have a good time?
So, assuming that this person is coming up and playing foosball, I kind of like to be the mother that's off away from her child, but still like watching them just to make sure nothing goes wrong. Mm. And so I like players. I don't like to kind of jump in and hold their hand and tell them what to do first. I kind of want them to get on the table and maybe get a little bit frustrated first. Maybe say, this can't be done, or I can't do this. And that's one thing I hate to hear is can't. Like, can't doesn't exist. And then at that point, I'm like, all right, I'll usually sit with them. Most of the time, it's rollover. They struggle with the rollover. To me, I think the rollover is more effective on Bonzini and easier to shoot than tornado, personally. And so I kind of know from a tornado style why it's not working for them. And so I have them do a couple of varied steps in a certain order of them trying to do a certain execution to kind of get that to work out and them stop hitting the wall and start actually making nice sevens back in toward the goal. And once they can do that, I don't care if it's a short seven or long seven, like once you're getting to that point where you're getting around the ball and past the ball, like you're good. You're good. If you want to spray it, just recoil the hell out of it. Just come back really hard. Then you can spray it. Get that natural tuck back on your rollover.
So backtrack, you said a nice, what do you mean by seven?
So like if you go out and do a shot and you go straight, you know, you kind of go up to 90 degree.
Yeah.
So I kind of want your shot to actually kind of seven a little bit, you know, almost cut back a little bit.
Is it cutting back? I can imagine.
It's
I can
like
see.
A roll. It's like a tuck on a rollover.
It's
I guess.
A tuck. Okay. Because mm-hmm. I can see. Yeah. I can see the Bonzini.
It's not
man.
Like a chip cut. It's you getting past the ball. You're brushing back into it, and it will kind of shape it.
You're brushing with the rollover versus chipping with the rollover on the tornado. Is that what you're saying?
Well. To me, a recoil is a brush, right? You go up past it, you recoil, you're coming back across the face of the ball.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot.
And if I want to cut, you can do a chip cut. It is effective, but I find it really easy to just
but
pull
you're,
it.
You're talking about coming back. You're talking about going either direction, but you're coming back in a brush to create that seven.
Yeah, I mean, it looks very similar to how you would do it on tornado. It's just a different technique for how
no,
you pitch
that.
The ball and start spinning it since the man is so heavy.
Because I you know Trevor Park, the SoCal Fooser?
Yep.
Yeah. He showed me a long time ago his wall pass on his five bar, his tic-tac wall pass. And I was like, that's unbelievable because he didn't do a tic-tac wall pass like a kick. He would do a brush. It was a tick, 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 and then it would come down and he was just brushing it down right at the wall. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But visually, it looks the same, right? And I right. guess what you're saying is that for a tornado player, if they wanted to do that on a Bonzini, it's easier to do that progression. I love that.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I'm excited.
Yeah, they have such a hard time squaring the ball and it sprays and hits the wall. So I just want to get it tucked back so that then they can more safely hit sharp corners.
I want to go to your tournament next year. It's all in this.
You can have this.
No, it just sounds so. It's just
come to national.
That's what I'm talking about.
National is yours, but
do the show from the scene.
Yeah, I'll do. I'll sit there and try to learn how to do a tuck, brush, pass, rollover, push, tic tac, lane, wall, all at once.
Yeah, tic tac's the hardest part, but
I don't think
all the other stuff works fine.
Okay, and one other thing, and Tom, I know has a question here, but one other thing, I do a tic tac pass on the five. Does that not compute on Bonzini?
I mean, Hannah did it, but also I think Hannah would agree that it was a lot harder to catch on this table. It bounced back sometimes pretty pretty hard off of a nice square lane or wall even.
Is there?
Yeah, there's definitely some tricks to the trade if you're going to do a stick pass series on, or tic-tac series on the Bonzini. There's definitely a few tricks that after you get so frustrated that you keep beating them back to your five bar, you're like, okay, we're doing something different. And it takes a little time for me transition-wise to remember those, but like if I just play on Bonzini like all week and I don't touch Tornado, it's fine. I'll figure it out eventually, but like I said, it's so hard for me, even though I use it currently, it's so hard for me to justify forcing a Tornado-style game onto a Bonzini table because Bonzini is just meant for finesse. You know what I mean? It's like the Elite. It's like they say technique is for the weak and blah, 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 but like not on Bonzini. Like, I don't care how hard you can crunch a pull shot. It ain't going to work on Bonzini, brother. You're going to have to learn how to finesse something. So it's just like, it's the best of both worlds. It's being able to do both. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. And that's why I always try to tell Tornado players, encourage them. Like, they shoot a pull shot, the middles on Bonzini is so huge. So the men are longer than a Tornado man, which therefore the space between the two rods has to be wider to accommodate for the man not hitting each other. So, and you can kind of tuck on that table easily with a pull shot. So the middles are just massive. Not to mention you can't throw a post on a Bonzini. I mean, you could, but you might as well just pick the ball up and put it back at the five bar again. It's just so big. It's a rollover. Yeah, that's hard. But if you can get a pull and learn how to set it up, that's the hardest part. A lot easier with the new surface, but once players find it comfortable setting the ball up, we got a new guy that's been playing a handful of times. He's crushing pull shots.
I remember Pappas crushing middles all day long on the Bonzini.
Bonzini players, their defense too is just very much like a just race. And so you just all you gotta do is get around that front man.
Tom, has that been your experience?
Yeah, no, I remember as a kid when we were first learning how to play, the defense was very difficult because the foot of the guy is thinner. Of course, I had nothing to compare it to because it's all I knew was Bonzini. So I learned very quickly when playing the pit, you've got to race. You've got to get a much better read on what somebody is likely to do. In fact, the partner I had in those days, we played all the time together. He was a pull shooter on a Bonzini, and he was killer with it, killer. But it's, of course, we had no one to compare to because we were just playing against college kids who had no idea. But it's a completely different game.
Yeah, two of the best pull shooters I ever saw on Bonzini were actually Tornado players. One was Brian Jones. He's probably the best doubles player I've ever encountered on Bonzini. The other is Fuji Alberts. He was a Tornado pro. I think a Dynamo World Champion out of New Hampshire.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we missed Fuji. He's unfortunately no longer with us. But so my question for you is the Canadian connection, because the Canadians are massive when it comes to Bonzini. So before COVID and after COVID, obviously COVID, they weren't allowed to come into the country. But have you seen a resurgence of the Canadian players?
In Canada, yeah, most definitely. I watched almost an entire stream for that Leonhardt tournament they did. Great stuff. They now have streaming up. The production's great. They're interacting with the crowd on the live stream. All real good things. And Nationals, we had a good cohort come down. Nice. I'm hoping to make it out again myself soon. Probably not this year. I'll be in Germany for a month. But next year, I'm definitely trying to get there for Leonhardt or the Nationals in Montreal. Nice.
I'm only about 4 hours in Montreal. We should meet up in
Montreal
next year for
it's Bonzini. A great tournament.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I might go too. Let me know when.
Okay, cool.
We'll do.
Let's do it. Are they're coming down for this tournament this weekend? Are you going to see a Canadian faction?
Two of them. So we're going to see Laurence and Marc Gilbert. So Marc Gilbert is Laurence's kind of original partner when they started playing Bonzini in the States when I was like 14 or 15 or something. And Laurent, he's kind of, in my opinion, like the Bruce Nardossi or Todd Lafredo of Quebec. He's always there in the finals, and for years he was dominating. Now you got, though, a lot of really young guys coming through. They're doing great. Francois Veilleux, Mathieu Savaria, really the talent stepping up there.
Justin Cayute, there's also Matt Biggie.
I played with Biggie in Florida.
Nice.
A couple weeks ago. Cool.
Yeah, great bunch of guys.
Yeah, I love it there. Like the hospitality that I try to give to Hannah is based off of my experience in Montreal. I won open singles for the first time Bonzini, and Laurent said, if you come to Montreal, I'll play with you. I was like, oh shit, wow. I can play with Laurent at the Nationals in Canada. So cool. And so I got there, someone picked me up from an airport, they gave me a place to stay. And the place I was staying was like super baller. This guy, Alex Molinaire, has a like whole building in like downtown Montreal. And he has huge loft, downtown food, underground foods cave, like everything. And so they always like put me up, I didn't pay for anything. They just really hosted me very well. And so I've always tried to like model that when I'm trying to get people to come because it worked for me. Cool. It got me out there.
Great. I love that. I love that for you and for them. Yeah. You know, and you can't do that for everyone. I know, but like, it's so nice to have that, you know, I don't think anyone's really ever done that for me. So, and I tour a lot and that's cool, that you would take that. And, you know, if there was a scene here, I would hope the same that I could offer that here. You know, I do have the tables and all, but it's like, I don't have the tournament yet. So, I appreciate it. And I know it's just going to be such a great time. Also saw there was a really cool restaurant that brings you chips and queso on a train tracks, like down like a choo-choo train tracks. Okay. And it's in Raleigh.
It might be downtown village.
Yeah, we're going to have to check it out for sure.
Yeah, you'll be like, we'll be pretty close to downtown. So like all the hipster food places and all the good things are all about 5 minutes away.
Perfect.
Nice. That's awesome. Speaking of food, what kind of food do you typically have for your tournaments?
So we're in an interesting predicament because the tournament's in a bar that doesn't serve food. There was a taco place that was supposed to be opening up, but it's not going to happen in time. And so TBD. Usually we've done different things in the past. My dad had brought a pig cooker out once and we cooked a whole hog and did barbecue and everything for the players. No cost.
You hear that, Adam? Adam, you hear that? I don't know if you know Adam. He's a very famous.
Don't say it, Tom.
I kind of have to say it.
I could see your lips curl to say butt smoker.
I didn't have to say a word.
Anyways, you guys are going to go whole hog?
I'm thinking we're going to do some catering. We'll see. No, it's still in the works. Pizza. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to stress about this. You know, that's a Friday problem.
What are you going
to
do?
The beauty of being a procrastinator, you can kind of block out the things and worry about those later. As long as they get done, everything's well.
Yeah, but I'm a procrastinator, and all I could do is think about it, but I just don't.
Oh, that's your problem. Yeah,
no, thinking about it. That would, I'm just bad at procrastinating now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I'd stop procrastinating if I actually thought about it.
Right.
Oh, hey. Yeah, there's a golden nugget there. I like that.
Yeah.
Hannah, did I interrupt? It looked like you had a question. I don't know if I interrupted you or not.
No, not really. I was just, although I do, since we brought it up, I will throw a question at you. How long has your dad been playing foosball, or how did you guys both get into it, or how did that grow?
Gosh, my dad's probably been playing for like 40 years or something. We had a Rene Pierre in my house. I think the first time I was probably 8 or 9. Some friends would come over with his and play, but I was like barely tall enough to look over. I just tried stuff. And then when I was like 12 or 13, my dad bought a Bonzini in the house we were living in. And every Tuesday, like my uncle and two of his friends would come over and we'd play every single Tuesday. And eventually one of the friends dropped off. So we did this little thing. We had this little trophy. And every week we kind of add something new to the trophy, whether it was a $5 bill or a rusty nail, like just whatever random stuff would like be glued on this trophy. And so it'd be me and my dad playing my uncle and his friend Todd. And whoever won the last 3 out of 5 set of the night got to keep the trophy for that week. And I kind of just got really into it, seeing these different guys play. A lot of my influences and my style come from Todd Witherspoon and Scott Caldwell, who were playing with me. And then I kind of got my first tournament when I was 15, when Alan started doing youth events. And when I started playing there, Dallas Corbett was my age, like another 15-year-old girl, and she was my arch nemesis. She played this super angly, smack everything toward the goal style, and I'm trying to like take my time, but she's just blistering me. And ended up being partners with her and kind of took off from there.
But you guys play a lot together? Or?
Yeah, we did. Until she kind of started getting too good for me for a while.
Too good for you?
Yeah. Ooh. She was, at that time in high school, I was really preoccupied with school things. I was ended up getting a music scholarship. I was really into bands, so foosball wasn't quite there. But kind of once I got done with that portion of my life, I met my wife, and she's from Germany. Mm. And so, like, within the first year, I went to Germany to visit her, and we just drove 6 hours to, like, Aubonne, France to play in the Bonzini Worlds. And wow. After that, I'd never played Tornado at this point. I was just only exposed to Bonzini. So after seeing that, and, like, Tony was there. That's where I met Tony for the first time. Jim Stevens, Alan Cribbs, Iceman was there. It was really cool. And just seeing how good those players were, I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, man. I got this secret insight to how great people can be at foosball, and nobody else knows this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and I'm going to learn a rollover. And I think I went from like a amateur and expert to a master in like 2 years after that.
Wow. I'm just real quick. You were in band, so I'm assuming you're a brass player. You seem like a brass player. Okay.
Yeah. Trombone.
Trombone. All right, cool. Figured.
Yeah.
Heard.
Yeah.
That is a very odd sixth sense you have there, Adam.
Freaky. I was in the string orchestra. I played the violin, so
I can spot.
See that?
You can't say Jared if you play in a string orchestra.
I know, but I can spot your shit a mile away, bro. I knew you were. Anyway,
but my band was more like drumline type of band.
We were drumline. Drumline's cool. I like that.
Yeah, drumline style, show style band.
I was more like. Sitting in the shower, crying, trying to tune my violin. Different vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know. Tom, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. I dig any kind of conversation about music. That's cool. Yeah. I just don't play an instrument. That's all.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys can tell each other from you're a string and you're a brass. Oh, yeah. Wow, that's weird. That is so weird. Anyway, no, it's the whole connection with Germany, of course, and we just recently talked to a couple of players from Germany who are doing Bundesliga in this country. What do you think about that? What do you think about putting together some kind of league system where we can incorporate multiple tables, Bonzini, Tornado, you know, the other maybe Roberto Sport, those kinds of things. What do you think we should be doing to make that happen?
I mean, I personally think it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. There's a group when I go to my mother-in-law's place that I go to and play during their training days. It's such a weird culture, right? I go through a Wednesday thing, we're doing a DYP, and it's like, no, we only do a DYP once a month. The other days are just like training days. They're training for this team competition. And I'm like, man, this is just so sweet to have a team and people that you can support you and kind of grow together as a team. To make it happen, that's a really hard question. I think you would really need a handful of people that have the sort of passion for it. I can think on the top of my head, like Michael Stahl, right? I see me and Michael Stahl and maybe someone down in Florida. I know they're organizing a lot, like people that are trying new things and trying to build this up and try to figure out how we can make this work. Start at just a regional level first and then expand from there. You know, you can start small with that.
We've been having conversations, you know, just casual conversations between the states, between New England, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, New York State, Pennsylvania, and even Montreal, because we're all in a relatively close, geographically close, all kind of saying, hey, why aren't we doing something here in the Great Northeast? Because foosball is alive and well here. We do have a player base. So how do we organize? How do we get it all together and maybe form a regional league and then tournament, some kind of finals? It's nobody wants to take the first step, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what it – you don't have to build this whole thing in a day. It could start out just – we have different groups in our state. We could have the four different groups start off doing some league action. And then once other people see that, I think if one person steps out and does it and you see the promotion and you see all the marketing around it, other groups are like, oh, man, that's really cool. And then once you start getting three or four groups, you know, that are all doing this league, well, cool. Now the best from that league can just go and compete against each other. And as that grows out, you can have just different right. tiers and levels to have an ultimate, you know, Bundesliga championship.
Yeah, it's such a great concept. Incidentally, you mentioned sponsors. You've got sponsors this mm-hmm. weekend. How difficult was that?
I put a post on Facebook.
That's
literally all I did. Yeah, that's really all I did. I could have done a lot more, but such is life. But we did get the mark that I wanted to hit for the sponsorship amount. We're going to be able to provide a lot of good stuff to the Boys and Girls Club. But this has kind of always been in Bonzini culture. Alan Cribbs did this at every single one of his tournaments. So he really? Offered table sponsorships. And normally, if a group wanted to have a tournament in their area, he'd be like, all right, well, if you can give me 8 table sponsorships, I'll run a tournament in your area. And so naturally, when I started doing it, some of the old school guys, Eric Joseph especially, he's like, I got some people. I'll get some sponsorships for you. And then Mark Droulette and at Michael Stahl, mm-hmm. Foos Clubs, they contributed, really appreciated. The bar that we're having in contributed. A few of our local players contributed. And I plan on probably taking at least half of my winnings and donating that as well.
Nice.
Wow. And so for me, I've never seen sponsorship as we need one person that's going to give us $100,000 for no good reason. Well, why don't we just get like 1,000 people to give us $100? Like,
right.
Yeah, it's more boots on the ground, but the more people that give you $100, they're likely to do it again over time, especially if you're attached to a charity that means something to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really good way to kind of help grow the optics of the sport in the area and to kind of provide better experience because I can ensure good tables for my players by using this table sponsorship to help offset the cost of those and the maintenance and everything.
That's what we need, man. We need that in the whole sport. We need people to be unafraid of that because it just seems like, especially in the tornado circles, they're afraid of sponsorships for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like everyone just thinks we need like some $1 million sponsor.
Oh, right.
I mean, NC State on Tornado, they do pretty good. They get, you know, sponsors too, and they put them on their mm-hmm. t-shirts and put them on the banners and everything, and they do a good sure. job with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the type of thing that it's not that hard to get sponsorships at those levels, the $100, $200 level. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And if you have a whole village that's putting into that, you know, hey, you work at IBM. Well, go to IBM and see if they'll give a $200 sponsor. Let me get plenty of money. Why not?
Oh, yeah.
And once you start having people doing that, you can really kind of build up the tournament and make it a cheaper experience for the players.
That's the plan right there. I like yep. that.
I think the most anybody will spend at my tournament is $130. If they played in everything they possibly could and they were like master or something, but for the most part, people pay less than $100 at Bonzini tournaments.
Wow.
No. But again, it's only a $4,000 tournament.
Sure.
But from my perspective, I try to make sure that, you know, there's only like 90% of foosball players that are going to win money at a given tournament. Of the 10%, maybe 5% make their money back, maybe like 3% make a little bit. And so to me, I'd rather give an experience where like, say I got $1,000 to spend a year on a foosball, going to foosball tournaments. I'd like to give them chances to play more tournaments and then give more prizes.
Yep.
I think we're giving out 66 medals and 41 prize packages at my tournament.
Wow.
So you should be able to win. In theory, everyone pretty much has a chance to win something that's going to be
with
pretty cool.
The 69 players all together, that's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we have more prizes than we have players at our tournaments. And doing the prize packages was fairly low cost from my perspective. Maybe I spent $50-$100 total on it.
Jeez.
And that's insane to me because, you know, being a tornado player that goes and does like, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to go to this tournament or I'm not going to that one because it doesn't have that much money. Not yeah. usually something that comes out of my mouth. But, you know, because I don't care. I'm going to play foosball. I love foosball. If you get to win money, great. But it meant so much more to me to be able to come to that Bonzini tournament and win or play second, third, whatever, and have a medal to take home.
Yeah.
And that might be lame, but I was so geeked about it because I was like, oh my gosh, my first tournament ever on Bonzini and I had this medal forever. And like, I got my partner to sign it because that was like my first Bonzini partner who like took this random chance on me and like didn't even know if I could hit the ball forward and you know, that was like so cool. Like what person does that? Like, and they were absolute rock stars. And like, I have a memory of that. Yeah. Okay. I don't care if it was $500 cash in 5 years, I'm not going to have, yeah. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. remind me, but I'm going to keep those medals. They're in my foosball room. And it's just like, that meant so much to me, even though it, you know, it's not the grandiose prize of whatever, but like, that's something special. So I really do appreciate the things like that. From the tournament. And it is very, very cool to get to go and play every tournament, every, you know, event for less than, you know, $200. That's awesome.
I think medals are just cool in general, right? You win a trophy, you probably pick that trophy up at the end of the tournament and that's it. No one sees you with a trophy. You win an event, cool, I'm gonna wear my medal. Oh, now I got 3 medals on. I'm just gonna walk around the tournament and wear my medals. You know, we don't have jackets, but we have the medals and just have the podium pictures. I find it really kind of cool how excited people get, and they display their medals like someone would a jacket on Tornado, and they get their congratulations, and it's all a good time.
Yeah, I like that.
Absolutely.
I like that. I like the concept of accessorizing your wins, because there's something to that, right? Like, you know, what do you ultimately, if we're talking about moving foosball forward, we're talking about maybe sales. Right. And you have to think about what it is that makes people want to come to these things. Hannah, you straight up had somebody sign your medal, the person you played with, right?
Yeah. So I do that with most of my trophies too. But like, I like whoever I play with. Say Robert and I win second place. Well, I want, you know, the front of the medal to say, okay, you second place, whatever. And then flip it over and it says Robert Yates. Well, I'll go put that in a pile. And then, like, say we win third place or first place in open mixed. Well, I'm going to get him to sign my medal, and I'm going to go put it back in the Robert Yates pile. But, like, I don't know. I just think that's so cool to have, like, oh, I wonder who I won that one with. Or, you know, I never have to think about that when I look at my trophies because, like, just look at the trophy. It has.
Yeah, I wish I would have done that now. That's really I only have the results to look back on. The website's down and everything. Like,
you walk around.
Yeah. Exactly who I want them with.
Walking around.
Yeah, it's cool.
The whole concept of wearing your wins is just so nice. I just like that. I don't know. There's a lot to discuss there about the things that would make foosball gain more traction with players. And the stuff that you're doing, Robert, is a lot of the stuff you're doing, I think, would go on that in that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting. I had a question for you, Robert. Oh, was it your then wife that you went to the Bonzini Worlds in France, or was it your then was it your girlfriend at the time?
She was my girlfriend at the time. Yeah.
When was this?
Oh, 2009.
And so you did a road trip out there.
Yeah, we drove from where she was at in Germany near Frankfurt. And drove to, I think it was Aubon, France, or Nantes, I can't remember which one. But yeah, we drove there. It was like 5 or 6 hours.
Wow, that is so cool. Because for those of us who have never done anything like that, and maybe never will, what was that like as your trip trailing around there in Europe and then going to play foosball?
No, it was great. I have to say, I mean, no offense to anybody, but I enjoyed the German tournaments more than I did the French tournaments. It just didn't have quite a welcoming environment for me, other than the Americans that were there. They were all cool and really awesome. But I did get cheated like a couple of times. And they used the fact that I couldn't use speak French against me too at certain moments at the front desk.
What do you mean by cheated though? What happened?
Well, like I beat one guy like 7-1 in qualifying, right? And he like says, hey, they messed up the result when they put it in or whatever. He's like, can you come up there with me? And I'm like walking up with him. He's like, you qualified, right? And I was like, yeah, I did. He's like, okay, good, good. And he goes up there, and they speak in French, and then I look at the thing, and it's like it changed to 7-5.
Right. Well, you know, so I'd like his point
plus minus would be better. I had someone swipe a point.
I'd like to welcome the guy that swiped the point. That's Pierre Fontainebleau. He's going to join us live right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Finally.
No.
Wow.
So but playing in Germany at the P4P Worlds was way, way cooler. I mean, it was 850 players there. It was just amazing.
I've heard nothing but good stuff about the P4P.
Like, we should all go.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's awesome. I know. And follow up. And who's the name? Have you been saying the name Alan Cribbs a lot, right? Is that is that? Tell us. I don't know anything. I've heard the name. I don't know anything about Alan Cribbs.
So Alan Cribbs was the founder of Bonzini USA, and so there's a single distributor for all of America, and that was him. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of in the pinnacle Winston-Salem area of North Carolina, and he ran tournaments to help kind of grow the player base and get Bonzini foosball, you know, out there. Before that, there was they had a lot of Rene Pierre tables, but Rene Pierre actually knocked off Bonzini, mm-hmm. and there was a lawsuit, and Bonzini won, and so then that kind of killed off Rene Pierre. And he kind of created it from there. I think he started doing tournaments around like 98 or so. I think he retired maybe 5 years ago now, 6 years ago. I'm sure it's been a little while. But he kind of set the groundwork for all of us.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, great name. No, it's I'm not sure who was involved back in the 70s distributing tables, but they were everywhere in my town.
Yeah.
In fact, pizzeria where I spent a lot of time, and then of course this local club, we had four tables, and they were always in great shape. They maintained very well. So I'm not sure who was doing that in those days.
Yeah, I mean, neither, but he really, really kind of brought it out of the kind of dying days of foosball and revitalized it for us and made a very professional tournament.
While I was at that tournament at Nationals, I heard the name like so many times. You're like, oh, well, Alan Cribbs this and Alan Cribbs that. And every time someone spoke about him, it was something great. And so I'm just like, ooh, Alan Cribbs, that's cool. You know, I wish I could have met this guy. And then like the last day is they're like packing up the table that I was going to take home in the truck. Alan shows up and he's like, hey, I'm Alan. And I was like, oh, hey, heard about you all weekend. You know, so it was cool to meet him. And he was like telling me all these cool things about, you know, like the Bonzini and how like the wood, like when you first get a brand new one, it's this color. And then like, you can tell like the older ones are like this color, like once they're, you know, they've aged or whatever. And he was talking about like revamping tables.
Yeah.
So I found it really interesting, you know, like say your Tornado has been left out in the garage and the surface sucks now. Well, you don't usually like put the effort in to go and fix it. You just are like, well, I'll get a new one or whatever. Yeah. But like with Bonzini, it seems like there is a lot of like refurbishing these older tables and still holding value in those tables. So I thought that was really interesting. And he told me about a few examples of them and, you know, really explained, you know, how to take care of my table when I got home and how to set it up. And it was just all like so nostalgic after the whole weekend. You hear about this guy and you don't know or know what he looks like. And then the last day, right before we're about to leave, like he's the one that's like taking time to like tell you things about the table. So that was a really cool opportunity for me also.
Yep. Great guy. And he was a master foosball player as well. I don't know how I didn't think of him when I was listing North Carolina greats.
He was the original great.
Yeah. Him along with Jimmy Parrish and Bruce Nardozzi, they were the originals.
Bruce Nardozzi looks like he's just stepped out of a Land's End catalog, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Doesn't he just look like he's going to go do some pioneering? I'm not bitter, though. He didn't double dip me once in 2004 at Nationals.
Double dip?
Oh, man, you lost to Bruce.
I know, right? Well, the cool thing was they gave me the T-shirt because they said, hey, you lost to Bruce.
Like, all right, don't worry. Yeah. I'm sure I have one somewhere.
I think everybody does. Nice. I like his Timberlands. I totally interrupted one of you, and I feel bad now.
Adam, just do your thing, man. Let it ride.
Let it ride. No, that was, I don't know. I'm just so excited, Robert, to hear about what it is that you're doing and the energy. Oh, what is the scene that you have there in North Carolina? What does it look like? Because we have you have this tournament coming this weekend, but where, who, and what, and why in North Carolina for foosball in Bonzini world?
So it's actually kind of interesting. We kind of have little pockets, and we all had our own like team names. So we kind of were on that league path a long time ago. So you had like the Cape Fear Hurricanes were like down in Wilmington, and we're Power Kick. Raleigh Foosball. Then you had the Winston-Salem Foos Force, and you had like Shots out of South Carolina, and you had their logos and everything. And so you still have those pockets today, but the only organized play in a public location in North Carolina is in Raleigh at the moment. They still play at people's houses down at the coast and in Winston-Salem. And then in like southern North Carolina, northern South Carolina, there's a good pocket that plays at a player's house. And same thing in Virginia. But it's kind of spread all out. We got some people in Asheville too that play, mostly Tornado players that just kind of fell in love with Bonzini like 15 years ago. But right now, Raleigh's kind of the most active scene. And I think a lot of the lore for us, and we're really lucky, is we have two Tornadoes and two Bonzinis on site at Snooker's Billiards. Cool. And so we have an easy kind of breeding ground to gain new players on a Bonzini by just, you know, you're not up in a match right now. Hey, you want to come play on the Bonzini? And some random Tornado player, like, yeah, I'll do this and give it a shot. And after a couple of times getting exposure and getting some tips and figuring things out, then they finally show up for the Friday night Bonzini tournament. But first Friday of the month, we do a multi-table tournament, which is kind of the way I want imagine us bridging the gap between the two. Right. You know, in a way, some Tornado players won't come out for just the Bonzini tournament, but when it's multi-table, they will. The Bonzini players will come out regardless, but they're less likely to come out at Tornado. The transition's extremely hard for them.
I like that. I like that, though. That's kind of a backdoor entry into the way that the world, you know, the ITSF and all that work. So, like, if we actually start trying to get the United States in a place where they're consistently winning across all the platforms, they're doing that kind of stuff, right? They're playing that and they're practicing that. I don't say this because this is my impression, Hannah, and you've been there and you know, you've been there, Robert, and you know. But my impression was is that yes, the men's team has been very dominant and good, but you know, as you move down through the ranks and the different situations and regions that have foosball access to other tables, it changes, right? Because you need to be able to play on those other tables to compete against those other players over there. Or am I completely wrong? I don't know. I don't know.
No, this is just my personal opinion, and it's not very deep because, like I said, I've only been to one World Cup. I've watched several, but I personally believe that there was a time when the U.S. power played everybody because they had Tornado tables here and we were so good that we could just crush them on Tornado and get by on the other ones. And that's when we were winning very consistently. But now that other countries have access to Tornado tables, we are getting left behind because we are not focusing on multi-table events. And not focusing on, you know, just being good and learning a different style and competing on a different table instead of just relying on being so good at Tornado. We're always going to win on Tornado. And then you get over there and you can't win anything on their table. Well, they are also very good on Tornado. You know, you can't rely on that. So I think the U.S. is definitely at a weakness in regard to multi-table tournaments. I've even posed the idea of what if you took a person on the U.S. men's team or women's team, per se, who was very, very good at Bonzini and expert pro-level Tornado. You know what I mean? It's more of an even basis, but, you know, we don't know. How do you know? The points committee for picking the foosball teams or whatever, do they know that they have a master that's in North Carolina or a guy in North Carolina, upcoming kid that's won every tournament for the last 3 years? No. You know, how do we get more awareness to that? So I'm definitely on board with saying that the U.S. needs more multi-table work. And I think that if we even improved our other tables just two or three notches, that we would be back on top very consistently. But where we are currently, I think we are at a disadvantage because we're relying on Tornado wholly.
Yeah, I agree. I think Tornado actually teaches the proper technique that translates really well with adjustment to every single table. Whereas when you come from a table like Bonzini, it doesn't really carry over to Garlando. We don't do slide stuff. Pinning on an old Garlando that was slick, well, there goes your pin stuff. They get a Tornado, well, they're trying to pin everything, and they're trying to use their wrist to get power without torquing, and you know, it's a lot harder for them. And so in the beginning, I'm sure America played good enough on Bonzini and Lanhart and Garlando because they could still do their pulls and their rollovers, and it just worked great. But you have people from Germany that are, you know, doing a lot of open-handed front pins on a sticky table on a Leinhardt. It's a little harder to adapt that onto Tornado. But now, since they've really went all in on, we want to be great multi-table players, and they've all adopted Tornado. The place that I play at, they're always on the Tornado. When I go to that group, Tornado table is always occupied. And they're, I've seen them get better over the past 10 years that I've been going out there.
It's inevitable. Yeah. No. Yeah, no question.
Oh, I definitely agree. For me, it's also like, you get better when you play the tables. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But say if you have all the tables at a local, yeah, you get better. But like for me, it's so much deeper than just forcing your Tornado game on there. You can get by with a Tornado style game on a Bonzini, but like it's so much like more nostalgic to like learn the different like overall styles. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're never going to be able to beat the Europeans if you only play players who shoot Tornado shots on a Bonzini. You know, you're going to miss the whole idea of a true pin shot, a true bank series, you know, the cuts, like all the cool things that they do that Tornado players don't really recognize. Like you're going to miss that unless you're playing people that challenge you in that way. So, but you know, anything would help at this point for Americans, yeah. You know, bring one Bonzini table, pack it into your van and bring it to every IFP tournament this year. You can't
tell
Florida
me State. People, it was great.
Yeah. You can't tell me people aren't going to occupy it. I saw pictures of them at Florida State. So like pack one Garlando, you know, it wouldn't be that much money to get one table, you know, for, you know, that you could bring to every tournament and just set it up, see where it goes, because that's the future. I think if we're going to be in, want to remain competitive in World Cup, I think that's going to be huge.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. And what you both are saying makes 100% total sense to me. I get it. And I hope the people that are out there listening that care to see the United States standing on the global stage in foosball continue to be dominant, which it has maybe dropped off a little bit, but even more dominant than it could be, or maybe what most American players are expecting of American players to be in any sport across the board. You have to invest a little bit of time and also invest a little bit of time in yourself and ask yourself why the things that you don't like about other things are things that you don't like. Maybe get over that if you want to support that. Because right. Hannah, you hit the damn nail on the head there. Yeah. We're going to be in trouble the next 6 years, if not less, mm-hmm. especially the more, because as much as we know that access to a foosball table is one of the biggest hindrances, regardless of the table, it's one of the biggest hindrances to get better at foosball here. Extrapolate outwards and look at in Europe when you have access to all these other tables and you're getting them and playing and getting better at them and understanding the nuances. And as what you say, Hannah, you can't force your game onto that. And then you have a new game. And then it's like, my goodness, it's like having different languages in your back pocket, right? You know, you can't force English into speaking German, right? But if you have all these different abilities and these different ways of wanting to communicate and talk, that's your skill set. And it's something we always talk about. I'm waxing eloquent because, damn it, I want foosball to succeed, but I also want to kick ass! Shit. Yeah,
and I think Hannah's shooting a front pin on Bonzini. I actually think it's smart. I think you can still win with a rollover. I mean, Yannick Correa shoots a rollover. There's plenty of great Bonzini players that win with a rollover. But as a multi-table player, I find it really challenging to switch back and forth my roller from Tornado to Bonzini from Tornado to Bonzini. So I've too adopted a different shot on Bonzini than when I'm shooting for my primary on Tornado, just so when I do multi-table, it's not messing with me. It's just two different things and ways to play.
Explain that more. What do you mean? What's your shot that translates from one to the other?
Well, so I can shoot a pin, pull, and front pin on Bonzini and Tornado.
Okay.
The problem is, if I shoot just a rollover on both of those tables, the transition, it takes a lot more focus. It's a lot more error-prone. But let's say I shoot a rollover on Tornado, and I shoot my pull on Bonzini. Well, I don't have to split my focus. It's like, this is my rollover, this is my pull. This is just what I'm going to do, is these two things. Or maybe I'll do a rollover and a front pin on Bonzini. If I'm playing a Tornado player, then I'll shoot the front pin.
Got it.
But, so it just saying, helps me to transition by having two different shots that
so,
I
okay,
use.
Yeah. So you're compartmentalizing within each table a completely different series shot feel set.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've won on Tornado and Bonzini, both with a rollover and with a pull. Ever the front pin. I've gotten close, but...
Okay.
The front pin I reserve for Tornado players that aren't used to cuts.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's kind of like forcing a round peg into a square hole. You know, it'll go, but it doesn't really fit good.
I guess my perspective's different because I never played Tornado or ever saw Tornado before I was shooting these shots on Bonzini. So to me, it always just felt like natural. Rollover was just so hard with that steel man. You get that man up and you can use all the weight to power through it. It almost felt effortless. But the pull, I think it is a lot harder. But people that can do it well, I mean, Brian Jones probably has the highest doubles points of Bonzini. He shot nothing but a pull. I don't even think he ever squared it. I think he just sprayed it every single time and went straight. It was amazing.
Sure.
But we also don't have top front pin shooters like they have in Montreal, or that they have like Miguel Dos Santos Lota played him in Montreal. Dude, I've never seen someone look like a machine playing a Bonzini style, but he'd look like a machine playing a Bonzini style.
Oh, yeah. He's one I've watched a lot of film on, to say the least. But
amazing to
see. And, you know, look at these guys. The idea of multi-table and all that junk is like, if you don't think that they're practicing every day and taking this stuff seriously, go look at their Instagrams. I can give you 17 different Instagram accounts. They're going to these training facilities and they walk in and it's like walking into a gym. There's every table you can imagine. And they're like, oh, today is Bonzini practice. Great. And they get over there 5 hours of Bonzini or whatever that, you know, but they're about it and we're going to get left behind. And I'm not saying that we're behind and I'm still very pro America. Rah, rah, ree, ree. I'm with it. We only got second, you know, but like we didn't do terrible. We just got second, but second sucks. So that's why I can say this stuff is because I want to win. And this is where it separates is like, you know, putting that into it. So I think that's a big deal.
It is. And you're not, you're 100% correct. And yes, I think that the America is, the United States and those events have been playing off of their ability. Well, there's a lot of different things, but the five bar really, the advanced five bar stuff has been really, really huge across the board there. Maybe playing with pressure, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. What you're talking about, though, when you start talking about, like, as far as, because I'm in education, as far as education is concerned, when you start having these centers, these places, and this access for people to get better at stuff, they're going to get damn better. It doesn't matter. I don't care. And you're right. 5, 6, what's the next one? 2025? 10 years from now, there's going to be a huge gap. And you hope, you would think that, I have no idea what to say to that. I don't know what to say, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would really help if we get some of the younger people playing multi-table as early as possible. You know, Balcos, God, what were the, like, three kids that were down in Florida that were crushing it.
You're talking Pulowski? About the Pulowskis, yeah. The
Pulowski boys, like, oh, my God, they're playing freaking amazing. Yeah. I played the older one, and I thought, man, he was good. He was tough. And I played the younger one, I'm like, man, I think he might be even tougher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he is tougher. In fact, Sherwin was the one who really kind of led the pack there because he was practicing more. In fact, Stan, their dad, he brings the kids to our Smashdowns a lot. And Stan says, if they're going to play video games, they have to go on the table for 2 hours. They have to practice on the table for 2 hours. And Sherwin was all over that, whereas Luis, he's a little older. He's like, I'm sure I want to do that. But he saw how well Sherwin was doing, so now he's just as good. But we watched those guys grow up on the table, and man, I mean, I saw them at the Worlds. It was Sherwin and I believe his mom that won beginner doubles.
Nice.
So it's like,
but it's not Sherwin.
Was it
Lewis won that Luis, one with his mom.
Luis. Oh, gotcha. Okay, Luis, yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're just amazing players, these kids.
Yeah, get those guys exposed to Bonzini and other tables, and then a few years, they're going to, I mean, they'll pick that stuff up quick at that age, you know?
Oh, yeah. And of course, their dad, what can you say about Stan and a push shot?
Yeah.
A push shot. Cool. It's like lightning, and we just had this argument the other day about the fact that one of the people that does videos online to teach people how to play foosball was saying that you should never do a push shot, and yet there it is.
I mean,
what's the rationale?
You can make it work.
Yeah, it's a.
I mean, what, I think what, the rationale to shoot a push shot.
I think the rationale is generally the technique makes it a little bit harder to tuck it back and to square middles.
Yeah,
like, people can hit longs and rip longs on a push shot. I mean, can you really tuck the push? Some people can. It's just a lot harder than to do from a pool shot. It's just one feels a little harder. For me, I shot a push in the beginning on Tornado. It was just a natural stroke for me. But then I really struggled once people started getting my straights and longs.
Right. But right. I think the exception that proofs that theorem is Sullivan Rugg getting second in open doubles at Mississippi State. Yeah. And I think...
Yeah. It's not impossible.
No, it's not impossible. I think it's just more like when you are told you can't do something, you just stop thinking you can do it, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what killed the push shot, though, right?
What's that?
The pull shot. It ruined diversity in foosball. No more pull kicks, front pins, back pins, whatever. Yeah. Push kicks.
Well,
push kicks seem to make a bit of a resurgence. I've enjoyed a couple of matches with some push kick shooters recently.
Rick Pomeroy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, push kick great. Rick.
Push kick Rick. I like that.
Push kick Rick. Oh, man.
Yeah. But I don't know. I got a little snarky there because I can't stand that conversation about the. You weren't saying that, Robert. I just every time everybody says, but the rollover killed foosball, I was like, the same things that people are saying about, well, that old school of people that are saying that about the rollover, they said that about the school before that said the same thing about the pull shot. I'm just like, give me a break. How about we just like try to do something bigger for foosball? Whatever.
Right.
And invite all kinds of shots. Whatever works for you.
Whatever kind. Sure. Yeah. And I'm so stoked. I want to go play by. I like the Bonzini table. I like playing on it. I like the stickiness. It reminds me, it's reminiscent to me because I grew up on a tournament soccer brown top table. And it was very, very, it wasn't similar, but it was more that kind of, you know, you see, you know,
controlling it with your toe instead of like laterally.
I love that. Right. I love a good back pin. Ooh, that's fun stuff. But I think we should probably start wrapping up here. This has been great, Robert. I've been just really fully enjoying talking to you about this and hearing about what it is that you are doing out there. It is just gives me so much hope for foosball as we go forward over the next couple years and decades. Hearing people like
I'm really excited about it. It would be really nice, though, like Hannah was alluding to, like, have some sort of Bonzini representation at the World Cup because we don't have any qualifiers. We have no methods to possibly make it to the World Cup to play. And we got some youth junior players that give them an opportunity, get them playing on a Tornado plus their Bonzini game, and they'll just go through the roof.
Absolutely.
But we got to find some way to get that seat at the table and kind of make this marriage work.
The more
I think that would really help grow, you know, foosball as a whole in the States.
The more diversity, the more
Absolutely. And then... And then what? What about Lanhart? What about Garlando? You know, the options are so endless.
I want them all.
Michele has the Roberto Sports.
Sure.
We can get someone like some Lanharts. That'd be sweet because that's what I want.
I love those.
Cam Burrows. I mean, I'm sure Cam could help out and, you know, get us a deal on something to get it worked out. You know, he's a Patreon. He's very helpful here. And, you know, I think he's Mr. Lanhart. So maybe we could get in touch with him to see if we can get a Lanhart at an tournament, you know, even if it's, you know, just in the corner.
That's a lot to figure out. Michele's offered tables and he's talking about wanting to do a Bonzini Tornado Roberto Sport table tournament, you know, somewhere in this area.
Love it. That would be awesome.
We had a quick chat here for a first time chat. Swoosh Bar, back toe is king. I like that. I don't know who Swoosh Bar is, but thank you, buddy. Thank you for joining us this evening. As we begin to wrap up here, you know, Robert, we're going to give you the last words here, but I think we'll go around the horn here and start with Tom.
Well, first of all, I'm so honored to meet you and get a chance to talk to you because, man, you've been speaking my language all this time, and I had no idea you were there. So thank you. Appreciate
that. No problem.
Hannah?
So I guess mine has a question involved too. The first thing I want to mention is just when you're promoting Bonzini tournaments, don't be afraid to promote them to diehard Tornado players. Prior to attending your tournament, I was one of those. And as soon as you kind of pitched the idea, I was like, I don't know. And I was like, well, I kind of need a table anyways. And then the more of the information that you gave me, was like, wow, I really do want to do this. And after I went once, I'm going to be back as much as I can, you know, but it was that easy to convince me. And I'm here, you know, I was known as Tornado. So I guess don't be afraid to promote Tornado when you're, or Bonzini, when you're at a Tornado event, you know, and try to get more of the Tornado base there. I think it's very doable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how to go about this or why it's preserved this way, but I really hope that you can preserve this like swanky tradition of Bonzini, you know, this like elite gentleman, you know, small groups, great tables, that whole idea. I don't know how to preserve it, but I want that to stay that way, you know, because it is such a very different environment. And I really do appreciate that and how the people interact and just the whole deal of the tournament is just so, so great.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'll add to that. I think as you do what it is that you do, it's not a, like, it's, this is my observation. It's not a matter of like, it's just doing what it is that you're doing. You're making it about the people, and that's all people care about, and that's all that matters. I guarantee you, and I hate to be cliche, and I hate to do this, but I have to quote a movie. If you build it, they will come, and they are, and I'll be there next year, just based on this alone.
I'll be with you.
That's all I need to know. This is all I need to know. You know, this is all that what matters. So I am super excited for what you're doing, and anything I can do to support what it is that you're doing, I'm excited for. I don't care if I come there and get my ass handed to me, which will happen on a Bonzini, but you know,
I think you'd be surprised.
Maybe, but you know, I still, if I'm going to lose somewhere, I feel like losing in that environment in which you create is something that I can go to sleep at night with. But thank you, Robert. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Hannah. But the last words are for you, Robert. Whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for having me on the show with you guys. This is a passion of mine. I enjoy talking. So being able to talk about my passion with all of you has been really enjoyable for me. And to Hannah about preserving the kind of environment that we have, that shouldn't be an issue. Unfortunately, I have to be judge, jury, and executioner. And that stuff's just kind of not allowed at our tournaments. We don't let it progress to those levels. We had incident last year, but we work with that. And so we've kind of always held a higher standard. And that's why it can be sometimes concerning bringing in some players that might not play toward that standard on Tornado and convincing them to come over. But I'll never be afraid to have a diehard. You know, I always give them the offer. If it's not my tournament, if I can't have them play for my tournament, I'll say, hey, I'll play with you at this tournament. Just come out. I'll be your partner. I'll play front, I'll play back. I'll like, whatever. We'll have a good time. And that's really what I always try to promote is let's have fun. Before every match, I don't say good game. I say have fun to my partner. And that's what it's kind of all about is having this community of enjoyment. We spend our money to go to these tournaments, stay in hotels. We want to enjoy the time that we have each other with each other. And we want to enjoy the time outside of it. We don't want to play till 2 a.m. We want to stop at like 12. And then we can still hang out a little bit and start at 11 mm-hmm. the next day.
Yep.
So it's really about bringing the family all back together. And that kind of keeps this thing rolling. We all want to see our friends and play foosball while we're doing it. So I really appreciate everything. I'm glad you gave me the chance to let everyone at home know about how we do things at Bonzini and about our upcoming North Carolina Open. It sounds like next year I'm going to have to lift the limit from 64 to something a little bit higher. I might have to look for a new venue, but I look forward to potentially hosting y'all in the future.
Cool.
Thank you, Robert. Thanks, everybody. And thanks, everybody out there that were listening.